Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It says that they were torturing him in the country that had taken him away. I think it would have been Asher's. When they were torturing him, he prayed to all the idols to help him. And each one he prayed to, and it didn't work. And so then he said, you know what? Can't hurt. He'll pray to Hashem to help him also. And so he said, Hashem, if you're the true God, I'm davening to you, I pray. So the angels up high, that it seems like sometimes the administering angels can say, you know, this prayer maybe shouldn't make its way there. It's very insincere. He's only praying now that the heat is on. And it said that Hashem, heard the angels, you know, discussing this, whether they should let the prayer go through, and Hashem overruled them. And he said that we have a rule that no matter how far a person has gone, there's no such thing as a prayer that's not heard. And Hashem made like a special channel for Menashe's prayer, and he was saved. He was given additional life, and at the end of his life, he was not as bad as he was before then. His son, who was born during an earlier time when he was still wicked, had not changed and was bad, and that was Amon. Tradition had it that he would, every time in the Torah where it said Hashem's name, he would write the name of idols. And so the people hid the scrolls. They hid the Torah scrolls because he was writing, you know, every time he got a Torah scroll, he would write, and he brought idols into the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, he felt that we weren't being fair. We needed to be a democracy. We have to serve all the gods. And so therefore, he was Jewish. He was a Jewish king, but he wanted us to worship, in addition to Hashem, also these other gods. And therefore, the sages and the people had to hide away the scrolls, because if he got his hands on it, or the government got their hands on it, they had to make it somewhat like what the conservative reform have done to the prayer book, or you daven to he and she and it, and you know, you got everything has to be neutral, and you can't say something to offend this one and you can't say shalom sani goy, and you can't say shalom sani isha, and you can't say, you know, you can't but the prayers have to be changed. And so they had to hide away the books to prevent people from cutting away all the prayers that we say. Well, you don't want to say the prayer for the country because, you know, we are Democrat, it's Republican, it is whatever it is, you know. And before you know it, they had to hide everything away. But either way, Amon was buried. He was not. Was interesting. After people died, they decided if they could be buried with the righteous kings of the house of David. If they were kings that were. There are people that in their lifetime, the one thing that keeps them straight is what are people going to say about them after they pass on? In other words, how are they going to be remembered? And so those kings that had not behaved themselves, so to speak, didn't get buried. And that's what the last verse in chapter 21 is. They buried him in the grave of the garden. In other words, he wasn't going to make the royal sepulchre. Sepulchre, or whatever that word is, he's not going to make the royal grave because he wasn't was not worthy of it.
I think we left off at 12.
Wait, what? Verse 12?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That could be. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, we'll go back then. That's very possible. It was before Shua, so we'll go back to verse 12. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. We're in the middle of chapter 21 then, and we're still. I wanted to forget about Menashe and Amon and skip it. More so than any other king, Menashe had sealed the fate.
He didn't even begin chapter
20.
Yes,
we were in the middle. We did.
Yeah, we definitely had started. I remember started. I assumed that we finished before Shavuos, and that's why, okay, I'm sorry. So we're in the middle of chapter 21.
Chapter 20.
We started 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, we had definitely gotten to Menashe, I guess we're in the middle of it. Thank you. In chapter 21, I was just seeing if you were listening. So that's I'm glad to hear that somebody notices. Just in general, it's good to know. The plan will be that it'll probably take us another 4 to 6 weeks to finish the book, God willing. And then we'll be ready to start a new book after Rosh Hashanah, which should be, I'm thinking that it'll be Isaiah, Yoshiyahu, unless the class has some different... In other words, if we went in the normal order of things, that would be the next book. It could even be, well, we'll see how the summer goes. If we end up doing more, we end up doing less. It could be we'll break for 2-3 weeks at the end, or we'll see what the mood of the class is, if the people are going away, if they'll be here. But that would be the plan. We hope to finish this book and then start Yeshayahu for next year, God willing.
That's what I wanted. Thank you.
Okay. So we're here talking about Menashe. And we hope to make a theme too. Hopefully it'll be then. This is a big book, the Book of Kings. So.
I didn't hear, I'm sorry, what did I say? I meant we will do a theme. Oh, hello.
Okay. So we can have a month to plan it or something. Okay. But if it's during the 9 days, then we'll have to be dairy, but that's fine. It's usually what it is anyway. Right. What's actually very interesting is that we're going to finish it. It's going to be very timely because I don't know which week we'll finish it, but we'll be discussing the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and the siege around Yerushalayim just the time of year when it happened. And that's at the end of this book, so it'll kind of fit in with the season of the year that we're in. But let's go back. I'm sorry for the being a little ahead of myself. We're talking about Menashe, who was one of the first really evil kings of Yehuda. Now, we had a lot of rotten apples in the 10 tribes, and they had broken off. And the nature of it is that when a person cuts themselves off from the spirituality, it's hard to expect much. It's a quick fall when a person no longer has that place that keeps them straight. And they cut themselves off from the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash was a place where even if people sinned, they got re-inspired. They got reinvigorated. They brought sin offerings. And so as long as they had the Beis HaMikdash, there was a system that kept the Jewish people fresh. It kept the Jewish people going, which is that it's natural from time to time for people to have to be less inspired or to have an up and have a down. But that's why they would go to the Beis HaMikdash and they would reconnect. What happened was that Menashe corrupted the Beis HaMikdash. He brought the idols into the Beis HaMikdash. And so it lost, in some ways, like he drove Hashem out of the Beis HaMikdash. And so we have places that are spiritual and that are holy. And if we drive Hashem out of those places, then where do we go to when we need help, when we need that? And that's really in verse... Let's start on verse 10. V'yidaber Hashem b'yad avad av nevi'im lemor. And Hashem sent the prophets to try to get the Jewish people to change. And unfortunately, Menashe was one of the longest running king. He was there for a long time.
55 years,
which is
a long time.
For monarchs in those days. I mean, when you think about the way governments change, just think about our lifetime, you know, even the communists changed after a while, you know, the governments come and go.
Normally they didn't live that long or else they were thrown out.
Yes, they were retired.
But he was strong enough to last for that length of time, which was amazing.
Yes.
Elizabeth,
60 years.
Right, that's right. That's incredible.
She used to be nice.
right, that's right. Yeah, she was... Yeah, I don't have anything bad to say about, not that I know of, I don't know, but at any rate. So, verse 11, Yan Hashem Menashe Melech Yehuda Hato, because Menashe, who was king of Yehuda, and again, Yehuda was always proud that they didn't worship idols, and that they, but he did at Toeva Se'ela, these disgusting things. Now, it uses the word Toeva. Now, sometimes Toeva is idol worshipped. We mentioned there a few things also. Apparently, Yehuda was a proud country, and people stood up to the kings. This was one of the things the Romans couldn't get used to, which is that you know, Jews are a proud people. We certain things like having a bust of the emperor in the temple or bowing down to the, these were things that other countries were willing to do and would be very humble about. There's certain things that we just we don't do. We don't bow down to the idols. We don't, especially humans. You know, we don't make good subjects. You know, Jews don't make good in that sense. We serve Hashem. We're not used to serving flesh and blood, and so that was not. But people stood up to Menashe and said, "Well, you can't bring these idols into the Beis Hamikdash." And so it was no problem. He just murdered them. That was the that was what he did. And it was really discussed earlier. There's a verse or two that talked about he filled Yerushalayim with blood, because when people tried to stop him, he just had them killed. So he did these kind of things. The Gemara mentions that he was also immoral, that he did incest, and just almost in spite. Certain people will go out of their way to sin. Just the more absurd and the more that it offends people, the better for them. In other words, it's almost a form of religion itself, to shock value. Like apparently that's what Menashe was. Yanisha also Menashe Hatueva is like something that's disgusting. You know, like that's like he did these disgusting. It's one thing if somebody sins for profit, you know, or if they that a lot of people succumb to. But this is like disgusting things. Mikola Shirasa Amuri, and not only was he bad, but he was worse than the pagans that were there, and the pagans were bad. Asher Lefana, Viyata. Now it gets even worse. Viyati Gamas Yehuda, but he got the people into it. There were some times where you had a rotten people and a rotten ruler, but the people were good. He got the people involved in his idolatry and these kind of behaviors. So therefore, verse 12, L'chein ko amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Now, it's so interesting. Here, you might think the evil God that's going to destroy the Jewish people doesn't care about us. So what's the introduction? The God of Israel. The God, your God. In other words, the God that loves you, the God of that knows that the Jewish people can be Yisrael, that we can be on a high level. So now it's time for a punishment, unfortunately. He may be Rav Yerushalayim Yehud. I'm bringing bad news. Asher kol shamav tatzilenu shtei oznav. Anybody who hears it, their ears will ring. They won't believe it. Verse 13. Venetosia Yerushalayim eskav shomron mishkos beis achav. And the fate of the 10 tribes now is going to affect the 2 tribes. What ultimately happened was that the 10 tribes separated themselves from the Beis HaMikdash, and because they didn't have that spirituality, they didn't have that closeness, they separated themselves from the Jewish people, and they went bad, and now the rest of the Yehuda, who actually had the Beis HaMikdash, ended up imitating the 10 tribes, because the Jewish people is a unit for good and for bad. And when part of the people goes off and has trouble, the other part can't say, well, that's them, that's not going to happen to me. No, we're all one family. You know, when one side of the ship is sinking, then everybody's going to take everybody down with them. And so, unfortunately, that's kind of the pattern that happened here. And that's kind of what it hints to over here, that what happened to the house of Achav and Michis Yerushalayim eventually would come back to Yerushalayim, Kasha Yimkes Atzlachas, just like a... talks about it. It's almost like you clean a dish, it's going to if you have a food that you don't like. I guess in the old days, if your person was a king and they brought him a food that he didn't like, he flipped it over. I don't want it. You know. You got to be. Do you remember the butler of Pharaoh ended up in the dungeon? You know, and next to Yosef, that actually saved his life. But in those days, if you were the chef and the king didn't like the food, it was, you know. It almost describes that over here, like you flip over a dish, unless it means you clean it out or you don't want any more. I almost have a picture like of, you know, no more of this, like you flip it over, or it was some kind of sign. I don't know exactly.
First it says wipe it thoroughly. First it's thrown the
Right.
Toss the food, and then as a final negative.
You toss it over. Yeah. Right, that's right. Verse 14, Atashia Sheris Nachlasit. Now, he says, I will forsake the remnant. Now, the remnant means there'll be a remnant. It just means that he won't care for the remnant. In other words, the Jewish people will be go through an exile, and it'll be tough. There'll be gladiator. You know, they use the Jews in the gladiator games. They would feed the Jews to the lions. They'd have to fight a fellow Jew to the death and for sport. That was what the Romans did. That's being abandoned, so to speak. In other words, we were a remnant, and we felt that life in the exile was very difficult. But at the same time, Hashem says there'll be a remnant. There will be Jews that will survive. It'll just be difficult. I'll give them into the hands of their enemies, and there'll be anti-Semitism. Jews, sometimes when the people are conquered, they're not disliked. They might be servants, they might have to do it, but they're here. Hashem says that there'll be anti-Semitism, which, as much as we don't like anti-Semitism, we can't fully explain it. Like, there was an irony, a lot of blacks are anti-Semitic, you know, like why should they, you know, here the Jews try to help, the blacks more than any other minority, and yet in this country some of the blacks are anti-Semitic. But it's not different than the Europeans or anything else. Hashem, part of history is that Hashem wants us to be reminded that things, we have work to do. We're not supposed to settle down in the exile. We're not supposed to be happy with life the way it is and want to just, have whatever we have and live happily after. We're here to improve the world. We're here to fix things. And the reminder that we have a higher destiny is every now and then somebody will stick their head out of the window and yell Jew or whatever it is they yell. But we experience that. And it's as comfortable as we are, every now and then we get that reminder. And that's the prophet said, that when you go amongst the Gentiles, you'll have that, unfortunately. You'll be Levaz and Meshisa. You'll be they'll make trouble for you.
Where does it say that there will be anti-Semitism? In the plundered and trampled?
Verse 14, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Levaz, Biza, means like they'll make fun of you. They'll be Mavaz of you. They will jeer at you. Their English isn't very good on that. He calls it plunder. I don't think that's such a good way. It could mean that they will take away what you got, and they had special Jewish taxes, which they did. But the word vaz or bezoyen in Hebrew, which means that they will make fun of you or they'll embarrass you, and so that's what I was reflecting. But the Meshisa also is like, he calls that prey. I'm referring to that as anti-Semitism, but it means that our existence amongst the Gentiles, we will suffer from it. It won't be a comfortable exile, or even when it's comfortable, every now and then we get a reminder. It seems to be what you think.
If someone makes fun of someone, that's a humiliating.
Mm-hmm.
Humiliated by.
Right.
The word prey refers mostly to that which is hunted.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that's such a good word.
It's not that we were hunted.
Right.
We were just picked on.
That's right.
We were chosen for certain things among the nations, and that has continued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure that word was chosen well, and I wouldn't be surprised. Does yours use the word pray?
Yeah.
Oh, it does. They almost never agree. That's right. What sometimes happens is when they don't have a good translation, everybody just copies what the other one used. Because here the Art Scroll and the Judaica Press and the version that you have all kind of they all use that word.
Happy with that interpretation.
Yeah. The Targum also, he doesn't use that word, either. Okay.
Rabbi,
but mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but before Menashe, Judah had not ever renounced the Beit HaMikdash?
No, Menashe was the first one to bring idols into the temple. That's right. So you know what they say. It says that Menashe, we're going to see, brought idols into the temple. It said his son brought it into the Holy of Holies. Amon, the one that... Now, whatever his father did bad, he tried to go a step further. And what's interesting, I mentioned to you that he doesn't mention too much about that here, about that he did teshuvah in his old age, because sometimes by the time when the person regrets what they've done, it's too late. Like they've done so much harm that they... And that's kind of what happened. He did evil in my eyes. And we mentioned that he was like out to get me angry. There's been like nobody that's people have been provoking me since they left Egypt. And this is the next verse. I remember, he killed a lot of people. He anybody disagreed with him or tried to stop him from doing with the idol, he just killed them. Now, it doesn't help that there are certain, in most cases, life comes before. We try to preserve our life at all costs so we can serve Hashem, and therefore sometimes we can make allowances to save our lives. When it comes to idol worship, even if we're going to be killed, everybody remembers that Avraham Avinu was thrown into a fiery furnace rather than worship the idols. And so Jews, since he wanted to introduce idol worship, and there were Jews who were willing to give up their lives, so he took it, he killed them. And Yerushalayim was filled with people that were killed. This was one of the reasons for the destruction of the first temple, was that people were killed. There was a lot of bloodshed. Besides, forget about the idol worship. Forget about the other sins. He was a murderer. 17. Now, there were other things to talk about. Like, as a leader, it could be he built certain bridges and he did, you know, he accomplished certain things for the country, but we're not interested in those. Whatever else you want to read, you can read them in the books for the kings. And even the sins that he sinned, you could write a novel about the things that he did. It almost hints to that over here in verse 17. If you want to read about Yom, and usually they wouldn't write about the king's sins. It's very unusual when we talk about, you know, what's written in the Book of Chronicles. It's pretty dry, you know. So and so begot so and so, and he, you know, got this many cities, and he made this many wars. All of a sudden, over here, it tells us that even his sins were mentioned in the Book of the Chronicles. It's almost like certain presidents. You know, Clinton didn't want to go down as being the president. It was. That had sinned or had done, but certain kings are just so, you know, their behavior was just so outrageous that that's what they were known for. And so he gets historically he goes down for his sins that he did, and they're written in the book.
No, you know, it's such a good thing that no one takes this and makes a Jewish movie, you know. You think the Jews are good? Look here, you know.
Yeah, that's right. 18. V'yishka Menashe Mavosav, and he died with his father Vikra Began Beso, and he was buried in the backyard. He's buried in the garden, like they weren't going to put him in the royal. He wasn't worthy of it, and even after he died, as soon as he died, people were happy to see him go. The Ganuza Yimelech Amnon Benota, and his son Amon reigns instead of him. I mean, Menashe was so bad that if you remember, his father, who had seen, had Ruach HaKodesh, that his son after him would be bad, didn't want to get married, didn't want to have children, because he had foreseen that after him would come this son. So he was 22 years old when he was king. And he was king only for 2 years. And his mother's name, Hashem Ima Meshulemes Bas Chorut Min Yitvasa.
Excuse me, why is his mother's name mentioned? That's unusual.
Right, so usually it's for good or for bad. So she probably was, she wasn't. It's.
She may not have been the best influence on him.
Yeah, yeah, her name is, because we don't use this name anymore, like, you know, Mishulemet. I mean, the name itself is a nice name. It's from the word shalom or complete, or Mishulemus also could mean like pay back, you know, to pay Mishulam. I don't know. Mishulam bas choretz min
yitvasa. I thought Manasseh was married to the daughter of.
No, Menashe was the son of Hizkiyahu. And the daughter of Yeshaya. So his mother, Menashe's mother was good. This is Menashe's son. In other words, so Menashe was from very had a righteous mother and a righteous father, and he turned out bad. Now his son already, I don't know what kind of mother he took. What kind of, in other words, this would have been Menashe's wife, right?
Tanakh doesn't mention that he murdered
his grandfather. That's right.
Murdered Isaiah.
He murdered Isaiah, right? It's not mentioned. That's right.
And his grandmother too.
I mean, at the time, I'm sure it was a big shock, but it wasn't.
When it recounts his evil deeds, they don't even talk about that, and yet.
Yeah, I mean to.
How did Hashem allow him to live as long as he did and do such evil?
So he had changed, he had, but it was too late at that point. But it's hard to know. Verse 20, V'yas hara b'nei, but his son also did evil in the eyes of Hashem. Now, his Menashe already was unique in his being evil. His son was just copycatting the father. He just did what dad did. Kasher es Menashe Avi, he was a chip off the old block. Verse 21, V'yad l'kol derech asher hocha aviv, he did the way his father did. V'yavadus l'gululim, and he worshipped idols that his father wore. V'shtayim, bowed down to them. Verse 22, V'yazav es Hashem elokei avosav. And it's almost unnecessary to say this, but it says he rejected Hashem, the God of his fathers, for laholach b'derech Hashem, and he didn't go in the ways of Hashem. Why does it need to say this? So what people say is that his father had come back, but he refused to do that. He imitated the early life of his father when his father was young and had worshipped the idols, and his father had come back and had come back to Hashem. But Amnon would not even do that. But yeah, he rejected Hashem. But Yazav is almost like he abandoned him. Like Hashem reached out to him. To abandon something means that Hashem came to him and tried to, the prophets came to him and they tried to bring him in, and he rejected them. And he refused to go in that path. So it's almost like an additional, like, there were people that worshipped idols, and they worshipped Hashem, like they didn't, there was a certain passion to worship the idols. It could be that was the entertainment, idols were very entertaining, they had very nice parties, they had music, and they had all kinds of,
they had orgies,
all kinds, and there were people that, most of the time when Jews did that, it wasn't because they really believed in it. It was entertaining. It allowed people to do all the sins. They had all the cardinal sins there. They worshipped the idols. They had human sacrifice. They had immoral behavior. They could do it all. And it's what all the nations of the world at that time were doing.
Everybody else did it, Mommy, so I did it.
Right, that's right, that's right. They wanted to be polite. They were invited to a thing with the idols. Some of them did it out of, they didn't do it in spite. They still sometimes came to shul and showed respect to Hashem, but over here it says he rejected Hashem and he didn't go in his ways. And I mentioned to you that he brought idols into the Holy of Holies. V'yikshur avdei Amon olav, and his own servants rebelled against him. He was so bad that usually the king's servants are just loyal. What do they call it? Apparatchnik, or like there's certain people in the government that'll do whatever the king wants. But over here, he was so bad that even the government people, they just they got rid of him. Misu es amelavesa. Now they had nothing against the family. We'll see that they were loyal to the line of David, but they v'yacham oritz es kolak shurima. Now what happened is some people assassinated him, and then the people killed the assassins. Alamelech. This was one of the themes of the Hashem never likes these people that go in and wipe out kings and wipe out a line. And so those people got killed. Amon v'yimluchu amoret es Yoshiyahu b'no tachtov. It's very interesting that the simple people, they felt some kind of loyalty to the house of David, even though you had two rotten kings in a row. They wanted another someone in the family, so they got Yoshiyahu, and now we get to a good king called Yoshiyahu. 25. Yes, the Divrei Amon Asher Asa and all the other things. I look through them. Sefer Divrei Yamin. They're written in that book. Because of Rasa, the Ganaza, Yimag Yoshiyahu, but no Tastim. And now we get to one of the all-time good kings, Yoshiyahu, one of our heroes. And it's important that people have heroes. We realize there were great people in our history, and the kings of from the line of David had very special qualities, and he was the right person at the right time. Now, we're going to see, he was only 8 years old, and they had murdered his father, and his father had been pretty evil, and his grandfather had been evil. And what he did was he reached out to his great-grandfather. He it's something that we see, that we have very deep roots, and so sometimes, you know, a generation can go astray, and then out of nowhere somebody reaches back. They find their heritage, you know, they go back, and you know, if it's not their father, it's not their grandfather, they go to the great-grandfather. And most of us, if we went back just a short amount of time, we would all find, you know, the pious and religious people. And that's what happened over here, where you know, this 8-year-old boy who was raised in a house of idolatry, he reaches back. Ben Shmona Shana Yoshua Mamalhu Shloshim Ba'achashana Moe, and he was king for 31 years, which is a reasonable amount of time. The Shem Imo, and the name of his mother was Yedida. Her name was Yedida. Yedida is a beautiful name because the word Yedid means my special one. My Yedid, if you call somebody my Yedid, it means my good friend, my unique friend. One of the Shabbos prayers where we talk about how special Shabbos is called Yedid Nefesh. So her name was Yedida. It's similar to there's a name today is common as Ahuva, the beloved one. Yedida also means like my beloved one, special one. And she was Yedida, Bas Adya Mevatzekis, and that was where she was from. So let's read about what Yoshiyahu did. V'yasa yasher b'nei Hashem. He did what was good in Hashem's eyes. V'yolach b'kol derech David aviv. Now here it tells us his father was David. Now his father wasn't David, but he made his father David. In other words, he saw himself as a descendant of David, and he followed in that way. V'losor yamin u'smol. And he refused to veer off the course. He refused to be swayed by what was popular in the time. He didn't go to the left and he didn't go to the right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking before that Amon may have been influenced by the fact that the people were also so bad.
Oh, definitely.
So he thought, mm-hmm. not only did he get worse than his father, but he was into popular mm-hmm. extent, and he just... because the people
follow yes. the polls,
right? Yeah, mm-hmm. and that's one of the reasons probably he was so bad.
Right. So the truth is, if that had been only it, maybe it wouldn't have been so severe. But in verse 22, it says like he rejected it, like he refused.
Yeah.
He just wouldn't go in the way of his forefathers. And here, you know, that's the irony of it, is that, you know, the one generation comes and another one generation can't wait to run away from it, and then the next generation is running back, you know, is going the so he found a way to his forefather David. Verse 3. Vahi Bishman Esri Shana L'melech Yoshiyahu, was when he was 18 years old.
The 18th
year of his reign. Think. Yeah, that would have put him at 26.
Yeah, 18, I take it back.
18 and age is 26.
Right? Oh, what's
no,
in
no, the 18? I'm sorry. The 18th year. Oh,
that's right.
Oh,
he's 18 years old. Shalach HaMelech Eshafan ben Atzalyahu ben Meshulam Hasofer. The Vez Hashem. He had a scribe. The scribe was a position in the government, a very important position. The royal recorder, the one who would write down the edicts and the decrees. And we had other kings also had the sofer. Today, a sofer is an important job because they write the texts, the Sefer Torahs, and the other things. But it's not like a government position. But in the times of the kings, the sofer was the one that wrote down the royal, you know, the... So he sent Shaphan, the son of Atzalyahu ben Meshulam HaSofer, to the house of Hashem. Lemor, he said the following. Now, this, you know, this is advertisement for the shul, but one of the things that people that, when they feel blessed, is they should want to fix up the shul. That's like a thing that a person should, that's a, when a person, you know, that looks to, feels that Hashem has been good to him, so they want to make Hashem's house. This was what David HaMelech said, like, you know, that he found that once he had rest from his enemies around him, and he wanted to beautify the house of Hashem. And so this is a natural type of a person wants to, you know, the for a righteous kind of person, he's thinking not only does he not want to reject the way of Hashem, but he wants to make it more beautiful. He wants to fix up the house. Yeah.
I just looked in the book of Chronicles, and it says in the 18th year of his reign. So it is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that isn't true. That is different.
Yeah,
oh,
see.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well. Yep. Olel Chuk Yoha Kohen. So he tells the royal scribe, the one who's in charge, to go to the Kohen, beat him as a Kesamul Beis Hashem, and authorize him to take the funds that are needed. They always, we had this earlier, that they had pushkas in the Beis HaMikdash where people would donate their funds, and they should take the funds. And verse 5, eat him ayude osem malacha, and give the funds to the people that do the work. Amud nevei zeshem. Eat osem osem malacha, sheri zeshem. L'chazek esberek abayis. You know, the temple needs to be repaired. Things need to be fixed up. He commanded that work should be done. L'charashim, and it was a huge job. The temple was a big, you know, anytime you do renovations or you do, you want to remodel. So they needed charashim, they needed carpenters and levonim and bricklayers and builders and fencers and people to cut. All these materials would be needed. Now it's very interesting what it says in verse 7. I don't know why. You always, every now and then you get thrown in. Maybe it tells us about his personality. He says, "Akla yachashv itam akesef." He says, "You know what? You don't. The workers that need the money don't." Apparently, maybe earlier regimes had been overly zealous, and you know, and it was very hard to get the funds released for fixing. Sometimes you have that problem where things need to be done, and the people are too stingy. They won't. They won't. He says, "You know what? I want the job done. So give them the money, and don't ask them for a reckoning. Don't make them do spend so much time on paperwork that they don't feel free to do what they need to do." You know, they're working for the temple. They'll deal faithfully. Let's not be overly worried or overly zealous on the accounting over here. Which is just funny. I don't know why it gives us that detail. I think he was. We're going to see that he was very trusting. We're going to learn about Yoshio. He does have a tragic end. I don't want to give away the end of the story before we get there. One of the problem he had was that he felt that he had convinced the people to turn back to Hashem. And Hashem promises us that when we are serving Him properly, we won't have to worry about our enemies. And what happens is that Egypt was causing trouble, like Egypt always causes trouble, and they wanted to cross through Eretz Yisrael with their army to use us as a bridge, like to have an occupying army come through Eretz Yisrael. And the Pasuk tells us that when we follow in Hashem's ways, we won't have to fear from our enemies. So Yoshio thinks that the people are, we following in Hashem's ways, he brought the people back to Hashem, so we have nothing to fear from Egypt. So he takes on Egypt, and Egypt was the superpower then, and that was a mistake. But we'll get to it. But he was trusting, because the people appeared like they worshipped Hashem, and that they had come back. But people tend to do whatever the king wants them to do. He perhaps was too trusting. We're going to see, the Gemara mentions that they had the famous folding doors. That what they would do was, they would write the, they put the idols up. As a righteous king, he outlawed idols. So they would put the idol on the back of the door, and so when the king's men would come in, they would open the door, and the idol was behind the door, and they wouldn't see it. And so he really wasn't aware that the people had sinned in the way that they had. And so here you kind of see that he's kind of trusting. He said, "Oh, nobody would ever, you can trust the workers. Today I would never imagine, you know, take a blank check and give it to the builder and say, 'Here, fill in whatever you want. Take, you know, here's my bank account. Whatever you need for the construction, I know you're a trustworthy person. I wouldn't advise that. But he felt that because he was so dedicated to Hashem that he would never take a penny. He was extra careful with public funds. So he thought everybody was that way. And so perhaps that gives us insight into what happens later, where he was so trusting that the people were. But otherwise, I don't have an explanation why that's thrown in over here. He says, all right, don't worry about the account. Unless, like we said, people were too zealous with the accounting, and because they were too zealous, nothing was getting done. But it's hard to know. Okay, we'll stop here.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.